right, back on AI Turks, Cenk and Anna with you guys. Stacy Kizer writes in, only a few things make me happier than meeting new people and learning that they're Young Turks fans. Well, I love that too. And guys, you'd be really surprised at how many conversations you start and how many friends you make if you wear Young Turks shirts. I'm not kidding. Obviously, we're biased because we want you to buy the shirts, shoptyt.com. Mm-hmm. But it happens all the time, and not just to me because I'm the host of the show. But it, and I get those stories all the time.
Is that a new jacket?
No.
No. Okay.
Instead, it's paired with the pink shirt.
Is that shirt intentionally pink, or was it washed with like a red shirt? And it was because I can't tell. It's nice. It's nice. I like it. It just looks like it might have been a white shirt that turned pink. It's great. No. It looks beautiful.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Anyways, no, it is an intentionally pink shirt.
Okay.
Chris Allen says, so the conservatives really are the true snowflakes. Well, it is in a lot of ways. I'm going to go to YouTube Super Chat. Kai Salis writes in, and he doesn't agree with us. Apparently, he's a conservative. He says, and liberals like Chunky Yogurt are afraid of mean words and, quote, unsafe spaces, typical liberal hypocrisy. Well, Kai, keep watching because that's not remotely true. We talk about it all the time on the show. We believe that conservatives should speak on college campuses. And what do I say in every one of those stories?
Yep.
Who cares? We're not afraid of them. Just let them say whatever they're going to say and have seven people like Kai listen. It's irrelevant. And then have a progressive speak and we'll crush them. So anyway, but good to have you as part of the program. Brent Fee says, you should do a segment every day that shows an updating list on how many times each Democrat in Congress has voted with Republicans. Good point, Brent. Derelict Zero, these are all on YouTube Super Chat. That helps the show. So, fun fact, Cenk, in Canadian French, cut, cut, cut is the sound of a singing chicken.
Oh,
so, that's
okay.
What Trump was accidentally saying. And Evil Naughty Smurfette, which is an excellent name, says, fear and ignorance go together way too often. Indeed, Evil Smurfette. Okay, now, Anna.
All right. The Trump administration is finalizing their plan to combat the opioid epidemic, and it turns out that there's a little bit of infighting between the Department of Justice and Health and Human Services. Now, they're coming at it from two different approaches, which is why the legislation that's being proposed by the Trump administration has some relatively good components, but some pretty bad proposals as well. Now, to be sure, the legislation is not finalized. Nothing has been released yet. However, Politico did get its hands on a version of the legislation, and here's what we know so far. First, I always want to talk about the severity of this epidemic because the numbers are mind-boggling. So there were more than 64,000 drug overdose deaths in 2016. Emergency rooms recorded a 30% spike in opioid overdoses last summer, indicating that the devastating crisis is actually worsening. It is not getting better. So there is a lot of urgency when it comes to dealing with this. And remember, Trump said that he would deal with it immediately after coming to office, and that is not what he has done. Now, here's what he is potentially going to propose. Trump is finalizing a plan that calls for law enforcement measures like the death penalty for some drug dealers that public health advocates and congressional Republicans warn will detract from efforts to reverse the epidemic. So the law enforcement component of the proposal obviously comes from the Department of Justice. They want to really beef up the war on drugs, and their idea is punitive measures. Punitive measures, that's the way to go, even though we've had decades of failed policy involving the war on drugs. Now, it does also include prevention and treatment measures, and those are the components that come from Health and Human Services. So that's where you see a little bit of a divide when it comes to the Trump administration.
Yeah, so actually there are good parts of this bill. In fact, there's parts that are so good in treating people with opioid addictions that they think it's totally unrealistic that Congress will pass a bill that large. Because conservatives will want to kill it. They'll say, no, it's deficit spending, which they didn't mind when they were passing the trillions of dollars in tax cuts for the rich. But anyway, in this case, they say it's unlikely to pass. And the amount of money that Trump himself has allocated is wildly unrealistic, given the not just the scope of the problem, but the scope of the proposed solutions, the positive ones coming from the health community. Okay. And then, of course, I'm amused by the Justice Department guys like, no, you know what we'll do? We'll break them. Yeah, that'll show them. No, they're already broken. They're addicted. We're trying to help them.
Right.
But when you, All you have is a hammer, everything seems like nails. Like, no, you don't have to hammer these guys. They're in trouble. You need to help them.
Well, remember, the reason why the war on drugs continues till this day, and the reason why there's still a federal prohibition on relatively harmless drugs like marijuana, is because people have made careers off of the prohibition of it. So those are the very people that are employed by the Department of Justice, which is why they want to come at it from a more draconian and punitive perspective. Now, let's give you some more details on this. The Trump administration proposes to change how the government pays for opioid prescriptions to limit access to powerful painkillers. It also calls on Congress to change how Medicaid pays for treatment, seeking to make it easier for patients with addictions to get inpatient care. It would also create a new Justice Department task force that more aggressively monitors internet sales. Now, remember, we've talked about that task force before, and Kellyanne Conway is likely to be the head of that task force, even though she has no experience with it. But nonetheless, there are the good components that would help those with addiction. They would take some preventative measures, and also they would expand access to naloxone, which is the drug that first responders can give to someone as they're overdosing on prescription painkillers or heroin.
So that should, of course, be readily available to all the first responders. So it's about time they did that. That's great. And I want to actually even compliment one part from the Justice Department proposal. They'd be empowered to step up prosecutions of criminally negligent doctors, pharmacies, and other providers. But let's note that there is one really important part of that is missing. In fact, the most important part. Prosecutors would not be encouraged or empowered to go after the biggest drug dealers, which are the pharmaceutical companies and their distributors. They're the ones selling the drugs to the pill mills in the first place. They're the ones that know that a tidal wave of opioids went into West Virginia, that all the people in West Virginia couldn't possibly take in over a decade. They know exactly where their drugs are going. They're literally the drug dealers. Mm-hmm. But they're the only ones who aren't going to be touched at all.
Right. I think it's interesting that, you know, they don't want to approach the root of the problem, and they want to go after the pharmacists and the doctors. And look, there are definitely bad actors, you know, who are pharmacists and doctors, but that's not the root of the problem. And there was a lot of tough talk by Trump during the election in regard to these pharmaceutical companies, and he has done nothing to rein them in.
So it actually leads to two other things, right? So first of all, 64,000 drug deaths, as you know, we talked about, and continue to talk about, because it's amazing. It's brought down the life expectancy of the average American by itself. That's how many deaths there are related to opioids. So we're losing years of our lives because of this abuse on average, okay? So Trump said he was going to stop opioid abuse, period. So under this proposal, if it works perfectly, they say that it'll eventually get rid of a third of the problem. What happened? I thought he was going to fix it overnight.
Period.
Look, what a preposterous set of lies that he told during the campaign and that people believed. So now, but he's had a year, he's had over a year to do something about it. Why is the proposal coming all like 14 months later? But okay, fine. So what happened in that year? Because Trump's magically going to solve everything, right? Mm-hmm. Well, it turns out that the CDC reported just last week that the emergency rooms recorded a 30% spike in opioid overdoses last summer. So it got 30% worse.
That's right.
Under Trump. Because he sat on his hands and didn't do anything for over a year. Now he does this proposal. Some parts are good, some parts are clearly deficient, some parts are preposterous. So now let's get to executing the drug dealers. So even deeply Republican senators like Shelley Moore Capito in West Virginia say, no, that doesn't make any sense. She said, I don't see that's going to solve the problem.
Right.
And West Virginia is hit the hardest, and he won that state by, I think, 49 points. And the Republican senator from there is, no, dumbass, executing the drug dealers, what are you going to do? Go execute the CEO of Purdue Pharma?
That's right. That isn't going to solve the problem, because the problem isn't some shady drug dealer standing on a dark street corner somewhere. It is, you know, this system that we have set up with the pharmaceutical industry and its cozy ties to doctors. You know, some of these trips that they take these doctors on, how they persuade these doctors to overprescribe some of these incredibly addictive drugs. I mean, that is the heart of the problem. What is he going to do? He's going to execute the pharmaceutical CEOs? Of course he's not. So it's just a nonsense, arm tough on crime stance that isn't going to materialize into anything beneficial. But I do want to give you a quote from Trump and then give you the reality of how he's helped black market drug dealers in the past. So he said in regard to executing drug dealers recently, if you shoot one person, they give you life, meaning life in prison. They give you the death penalty. These people can kill 2,000, 3,000 people and nothing happens to them. Well, first of all, you know, a lot of them do get caught and they do spend a lot of time behind bars. But what is the reality when it comes to Trump and drug dealers? Well, according to the Daily Beast, back in the 1980s, Trump helped a multi-kilo cocaine dealer escape with a minimal sentence. A little over a decade ago, Trump worked with a convicted pill pusher, this is another drug dealer, pill pusher to develop Trump Tower Philadelphia, a real estate deal that also involved Don Jr. and Ivanka. So I'll give you more details on who those drug dealers are. But when it came to one of these dealers, he literally wrote a letter to the judge in order to give this individual a minimal sentence. And, you know, referred to this person as a good member of society, a credit to the community, conscientious, forthright, and diligent. Because it was one of his buddies. It was someone that he was doing deals with. So when it comes to that, no, doesn't care about being tough on crime.
And this is not, hey, a guy got caught with a couple of joints on the street and they say, oh, you were gonna deal it to your friends. No, he brought in tons of ecstasy from Belgium and then he did it over and over again and he brought in different kinds of drugs. He was a drug dealer.
Yes.
But he was rich and he had come from a rich family. So Trump's like, as long as you're rich, what do I care? And so they were going to do Trump Tower together in Philadelphia. And he's like, well, he's a swell guy. Now, but if it's a poor drug dealer, let's execute the son of a bitch. Okay? The other guy from the 1980s, he also had a deal with, they used to use his helicopters.
That's right. He also
stayed in Trump Tower in New York. And they would use his helicopters to bring people to his Trump's Atlantic City casinos. So then he writes a glowing letter. And that guy's case got moved from Cincinnati for no reason to New Jersey. And guess who the judge was? Donald Trump's sister.
It was Donald, but then later she did recuse herself to her credit, but.
No, only when they found out that she was also using the helicopters.
That's right.
Then she had to recuse herself. Then they handed it off to a friend of hers in that same court. And of course the guy got a lenient sentence.
Yeah, served only 18 months and then was released to a halfway house.
In one of these cases, the drug dealer himself got, at the end of everything, finally 3 years after constantly violating the law. The people lower on the chain got 20 years. Why? Because they weren't rich. It's sick. It's absolutely sick. And as usual, the same thing with him when he uses illegal immigrants on his buildings, when he brings in more immigrants today, even when he's president. With visas, yep. Foreign workers, when he's railing against it, all of his products are made outside of the country. He had another case of hypocrisy. He says, execute the drug dealers, but not my buddies who are drug dealers who I love.
I mean, look, he bragged about lying to Justin Trudeau. What makes anyone think that he wouldn't lie to the American people just to get their votes?
Of course. And then finally, Senator Dan Sullivan, another right-wing Republican, this time from Alaska, when asked, you guys really gonna vote to execute drug dealers? He said, quote, I don't know if the president was serious or just said it off the cuff. In other words, even the Republican senators are like, look, the guy's a joker. You want me to take him seriously? But it turns out he is serious. It's in the actual proposal. So now they're gonna have to vote on whether to execute drug dealers. And if we have to bother telling you, we will. All the research shows that in other countries where they've tried execution as a way of stopping the demand for drugs and the amount of drugs that are in the country, it has never worked. Yeah.
We got to take a break. When we come back, Tucker Carlson talks about how March should be men's month, not necessarily women's month.
No. Poor men. All right, back on the Young Turks. Members of the day are Adrian Delgado and Sarah Householder, great name. Today in the post game, I'm going to do the UFO story that I've been dying to do for the last couple of days. They're here. Just keep it real. They're here. We have video evidence. I want to show it to you. We have evidence. Mm-hmm. And then in Rebel headquarters, I get a heartwarming story. In a race that a just Democrat lost, but nonetheless, it was heartwarming. Mm-hmm. So that's really interesting. And then aggressive progressives, of course, for members as well. So tytnetwork.com/join to become a member. And just time for one tweet for you. Jeff Waldorf writes in, if Trump executes the drug dealers, where is Larry Kudlow going to get his fix? Okay, that was in the past, guys. Okay, all right, what's next?
All right. March typically celebrates women, known as Women's Month. However, Tucker Carlson feels like he needs to take over the month and represent some of the issues that men are facing today. Now, it's a multi-part series that Carlson is focusing on. And in the latest video, he discusses the issue of wages that men earn versus women. I don't want to give too much away. Let's take a look at the first video.
One well-regarded study released last year found that when men's wages fell relative to women's, families didn't form. According to the authors, a falling male wage reduced, quote, the attractiveness of men as potential spouses, thus reducing fertility and especially marriage rates. Researchers also noted a dramatic increase in out-of-wedlock births when men made less. In the words of one of the authors, an economics professor at MIT, quote, we see a decline in fertility, a decline in marriage, but a rise in the fraction of births that are disadvantaged. As a consequence, the kids are living in pretty tough circumstances. Numerous academic studies have reached the very same conclusion. Research from 2015 found that, quote, when a randomly chosen woman becomes more likely to earn more than a randomly chosen man, marriage rates decline. Those who do marry report being less satisfied and are more likely to divorce. Low male wages are a driving force in family dissolution, and that's why affluent neighborhoods in which men make more have a higher proportion of married couples and fewer divorces. The opposite is also true, and that leads to a cascade of social problems, which over time become a disaster. Men who make lower wages marry less and father more children out of wedlock. These children growing up without fathers tend to make lower wages themselves in later life.
Okay, so I watched the full segment, which we don't have time to show you on our show. And you know, he keeps referencing academic research from 2015. And he never states where the research is from, who did the research. The only time he referenced research was a study done by MIT, which actually did have some fascinating results. And we'll talk about that in just a minute. But he twisted the results of that study to suit his narrative. Right. So he made it seem as though, you know, society is really screwing men over. Women are getting paid a lot more now. And as a result, it's destroying the sanctity of marriage. And in that same video that we just showed you, he talked about how men earning less leads to lower fertility, but increases the number of children born out of wedlock. Does he know what fertility is? Because that kind of contradicts the message, whatever message he's trying to spread.
Okay, no, but you know, it's funny. I'm sure the conservatives took away from it what you saw there and what he intended. But as a progressive, as I looked at that, I thought, and? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, so you say men are making less than women in some cases, and that's making men feel bad and make them seem less attractive to women. So what are we supposed to do about it? Knock down women's wages? Well, why don't men just step up their game? I mean, for my whole life, conservatives have gone around saying, take personal responsibility, pick yourself up by the bootstrap. Now that men, in some rare cases, or not even rare, in limited cases, certain professions and et cetera, right, are making less money, why don't we throw the same bootstraps at the guys?
You just made a great point. And the MIT study focuses, a component of that focuses on the point that you just made right now, okay? Mm-hmm. Because there are jobs that were typically male dominated that are now disappearing because of automation, because of, you know, competition from and outsourcing to China and other countries. And so it's a legitimate concern, but there's also the issue of the types of jobs men are and are not willing to take. And we'll get to that in a minute, but I first want to toss to the second video. Let's take a look.
What's striking is how little notice these facts get from our policymakers. Their overriding aim is to raise women's wages to parity or above men's. There's nothing inherently wrong with that, but these are complex questions with numerous and profound unintended consequences, so they deserve a vigorous public debate. It's notable that most women, the very population on whose behalf these policies are supposedly devised, strongly prefer to marry men who make more than they do. But what's beyond debate is that Washington and corporate America aren't thinking a lot about how to solve the male wage crisis. If anything, they're exacerbating it. Lawmakers in both parties, for example, have heartily embraced self-driving vehicles and drone delivery of packages. It's all impressive technology, but what would be the effect on employment? Has anyone asked that?
Okay. So there are kernels of truth to what he's saying there, right?
Yeah. So I actually want to give him credit for an earlier segment that he did on the same men's issue in a second, because some of the stuff that he says is true, but then he gives a analysis on it that's twisted, right? Mm-hmm. So let me break down though the deceptive tactics he used in those two clips. In the earlier clip, he talked about now in the affluent neighborhoods they stay together more, and that's because the men are making more. No, wait, that's not what the study shows. It doesn't show it's because the men are making more. It's because they have more money, hence less strife. So a lot of times couples fight over limited resources. It's the fact that the household has more money, not that men have more money than women. So you totally twisted that. So secondly, in that case, in the second clip, he said, now a lot of lawmakers are pushing that women get the same amount of money or more than men. Wait, who's pushing for that? I've literally never seen anyone say, no, women should make more than men. No one has ever said that.
So that wasn't a mistake. That was an intentional, little message that he snuck in there. Because the reality is, there is this fear among some, usually on the right wing, that women are fighting to be more powerful than men, to make more than men, when in reality, they want equality. And I'm talking about equality of opportunities, okay? No one wants anything handed to them. We just want equality of opportunities. If we are working the same job, then we deserve the same pay. And you know, they will take that message and twist it to essentially pit men against women on this issue that everyone should be behind. Because guess what? Men and women get married. You have a dual income household. The more money and the more resources that household has, the more successful that household will be. And so it's just weird. It's a contradiction after contradiction in his messaging.
And that leads to one more deception that he had in that second video. He said, they say that they want women to make the same amount of money as men or more. But did you know that women prefer to marry men who are making more than them? Wait, those two things are not logically connected. So just because women would like to marry someone who also has money or even more money than them, because then the household would have more money, that doesn't mean that they would like to make less money unfairly, right? Those things are not logically connected. They'd like to be able to get paid for what they're worth and get paid at the same rate as men. And they'd also like to marry someone who has more money so they could feel more comfortable, which every person does.
No, but again, there's a contradiction there, right? Women want to make more money than men. Women want to marry men that make more money than them. What?
In other words, humans like to have money because it makes life a little bit better. But that doesn't mean that women want to get paid less. And that seems to be what he's implying. A woman, they want men who make more money than them. So it's okay if we pay them less. It's those subtle little deceptions.
So let's get to the one study that he actually did cite in making his argument. And again, there are kernels of truth in what he is saying. There are certain blue collar workers who have lost their jobs in manufacturing for a variety of reasons, but women are not making significantly more money than those men did. In fact, women typically work in professions that pay significantly less, which is the reason why men are less likely and less willing to transition to those professions. Let me give you those details. So the two occupations predicted by the Bureau of Labor Statistics to decline the most quickly from 2014 to 2024 are locomotive firers, shrinking 70%, and vehicle electronics installers and repairers, down 50%. They are 96% and 96% and 98% male. Of the fastest growing jobs, many are various types of health aides, which are about 90% female. When men take these so-called pink collar jobs, they have more job security and wage growth than in blue collar work, according to recent research. But they are paid less and feel stigmatized. So the MIT economist that Tucker Carlson referenced in that piece or in that segment said the following. This is his quote. The jobs being created are very different than the jobs being eliminated. I'm not worried about whether there will be jobs. I'm very worried about whether there will be jobs for low educated adults, especially the males who seem very reluctant to take the new jobs. So here's an example of one man who was interviewed by the New York Times. He said the following. I ain't gonna be a nurse. I don't have the tolerance for people. I don't want it to sound bad, but I've always seen a woman in the position of a nurse or some kind of healthcare worker. I see it as more of a woman's touch. So a sociologist who was also interviewed by the Times said, traditional masculinity is standing in the way of working class men's employment. And I think it's a problem. So there is a cultural issue and there's also an education issue because the very party that continues to dismantle education, defund education, and also give it a bad name with all sorts of defamatory statements in regard to elitism are convincing people to not pursue their education and remain low skilled. And yes, automation is happening. There is nothing we can do to stop that. We're not going to get rid of technology. It will continue to advance. And our only fight against that is to continue educating Americans for higher paying, high skilled jobs.
So last week he did a similar segment about men in America and it was like poor men. So a lot of people made fun of it. And I did too a little bit because he was blaming feminists and that's preposterous. But when I watched the whole segment, I decided not to do a story on it because a lot of the stuff he was saying was okay. It's just his interpretation was wrong. So for example, he pointed out that women are getting educated at greater rates and they're going deeper into education, getting more masters, more doctorate degrees, more lawyers, doctors, etc. So I see that same issue and it's real, that's true. And I don't think damn feminists or oh my God, our culture made men worse or somehow unnaturally bolstered women. I think no, women are doing a good job of getting educated. Now what we need to do is to help our brothers realize that you should get an education too. You know, you could also do better and we should push men in our society to be, if you will, stronger and smarter. And I don't mean in terms of IQ, I mean in terms of making the right decisions. I'm also a man. So and as progressives, you know what we want? We want equality. That's it, equality. We don't want women to make more. We don't want women to be above men. We want women to have the equality of opportunity that men do. But we also want men to have that same equality of opportunity. So yes, men in America are in some cases falling behind. Education, retraining, these things, those parts are true. But the prescription to that is not to blame feminists and the culture. The prescription is to actually help men get beyond those problems, get more of an education, get more acclimated to the new economy and hence make more money so the whole country will be better off.
We have to take one more break. When we come back, a catastrophe of a story. You don't want to miss it.
All right, back on the Young Turks. The postgame, we'll talk about UFOs and Anna's report card from elementary school, which is super fun and will lead to a rant of mine about elementary school today. TYTnetwork.com/join to become a member. What's next, Anna?
All right. The Traditionalist Worker Party, a white nationalist group in the United States, is no more following infidelity and a physical altercation between the leader and the spokesperson for the group. Now, the leader, Matthew Heimbach, was arrested Tuesday for allegedly assaulting his wife and his spokesman after Heimbach was caught cheating on his wife with the spokesman's wife. So, David Matt Parrott was the party spokesperson until Tuesday when he quit in a statement to the Southern Poverty Law Center. Parrott's wife, Jessica, was allegedly having an affair with Heimbach, who is married to Parrott's stepdaughter from a previous marriage. All sorts of twists and turns, all sorts of drama. Since the story is so complicated, we decided to do a reenactment for you guys so you can visualize the drama. Take a look. Parrott and Heimbach arranged to set up Heimbach and Jessica in a trailer on Parrott's property to catch them having sex. But the box broke under Parrott's weight. Parrott entered the trailer. But that's when Heimbach allegedly choked him. Parrott threw a chair at him. Heimbach hit back, choking him into unconsciousness. Parrott fled to a Walmart near his home and called police around 1 a.m.
Okay, there's so many wonderful parts of this story. So first of all, one white nationalist cuckolding another white nationalist.
I mean,
all right, we're already like in news heaven. Mm-hmm, okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Number two is the Heimbach, who was by the way one of the organizers of the Charlottesville rally and assaulted someone at a Trump rally and is
a young black woman.
A young black woman. Of course, mm-hmm. He's a white nationalist. He's in trouble for that. Was sleeping with in essence his mother-in-law.
Yeah.
It's so weird that a white nationalist would do something that scummy. And the mother-in-law, also a white nationalist, mm-hmm. It's like, oh, let me sleep with my stepdaughter who also married a white nationalist. Let me sleep with her husband. Like, this is like a who's who of terrible people.
It's insane. So the cops arrived to Heimbach's home to question him because, as you know, Parrott called the cops and reported what was going on. Now, Heimbach, again, is already in trouble because of the fact that he assaulted an African-American woman at a Trump rally. And because of this, he might actually serve time in jail. But he was charged with assault as a result. And he assaulted his own wife when the police showed up. He essentially told his wife, I don't want to talk to them. Go tell them that everything's okay and there's no problem. But remember, she's getting cheated on too. She's angry. And so a scuffle ensues between those two. And the cops ended up arresting him because they could hear that things had gotten incredibly physical with his own wife.
He grabbed her head, threw her down, made her bleed. And apparently she has a recording of all of it. So he's in a world of trouble there. Back to Parrott. He writes to the Southern Poverty Law Center, who has been tracking these guys all along. I'm done. I'm out. SPLC is won. Matt Parrott is out of the game. You all have a nice life. That's the same genius who thought it was a good idea. Hey, we'll catch him by just looking in the window. And then they're like, hey, look, the guy's in the window.
By the way, he referred to this whole debacle as a white trash circus.
A cuck-tastrophe indeed. Bye-bye.